Oh, that's right. We are here on a Thursday afternoon. It's hot outside, but it's very cool in here. And I have a new person to introduce to you, Ellen Weaver. She is from Greenville, and she is now the president and CEO. Two roles, Ellen, president and CEO of the Palmetto Forum, right here, Palmetto Policy Forum, there you go, right here in South Carolina. It's an organization that is newly formed, actually started 2009, didn't it?
That's right.
And Ellen, tell us a little bit about this organization, and then we're going to talk some about you. It is so exciting that you, of course, worked for Senator DeMint for 12 years. And now you are doing this. How does it feel to be an independent business person?
Well, Anne, I would be lying if I said it wasn't a little bit scary, but it's also exciting at the same time. I think the opportunity to kind of strike out on my own, so to speak, and really build something from the ground up here is a great opportunity and one that I'm very thankful to have. And it's great to be with you today. I appreciate being here. We love Greenwood. So a little bit about Palmetto Policy Forum and how it started. So in 2009, there were a couple of businessmen who got together and said, you know, South Carolina is one of the reddest states in the country, and yet it seems like we have trouble developing critical mass behind the kind of free market reforms, be it in education or healthcare or tax policy, that can really push South Carolina forward and make us one of the most competitive places in the country to do business and continue to refine. I mean, we obviously have a wonderful state, great geography, freedom-loving people, and, you know, we have companies like Boeing, Continental, and so many others that are locating here, but we're always competing against other states. What can we do to sharpen ourselves to always be the best, to be better? And so they said, you know, what we really don't have right now is an organization that's serving as an ideas generator, a policy generator that can look all over the country and say, what are the things that are working either in other states or right here at home, maybe, on the local level? What are the innovations? What are the policy ideas that we need to be talking about as a state and that we need to be building support behind so that we can implement them here in South Carolina? And so that's how the idea of Palmetto Policy Forum was born. Fast forward a couple of years to this last December when Senator DeMint announced his resignation from the U.S. Senate to go lead the Heritage Foundation.
That set a whole lot of balls in rolling, didn't it?
It sure did. Many balls, far more important than mine, but not the least of which it was a huge change for me. I had worked for Senator DeMint for 12 years, and so the question became, you know, how can I continue to make a difference in a state that I love, in my home state? And that was a consideration for the senator, too. He cares very deeply about South Carolina. And in going to Heritage, he said, you know, I want to be able to hold South Carolina up as a beacon of freedom and opportunity and what good policy should look like at the state level. So this is why it's so important that we have a group like this. So with his support and an investment of his remaining campaign funds into this group, we were able to get off the ground in a strong fashion. We've already held several legislator education events in Columbia, which is going to be a big part of what we're doing. And we also hope in the coming months to really work to start building a permanent grassroots coalition in South Carolina around these foundational ideas that we feel are going to really make a difference in unleashing opportunity for all of our citizens in South Carolina.
Well, although you said it's a fledgling organization here, Ellen, you come with such a good background as state director, as a speechwriter, graduate of Furman, top of your class. I'm telling you what, you live and breathe this stuff.
I do. Well, and just one quick correction. I actually graduated from Bob Jones, also in Greenville. But thank you for saying that. I have been incredibly blessed by so many opportunities in Senator DeMint's office. I actually went to work for him right out of school in 2001 and have been in his office for 12 years. So he was my home congressman before he was my senator. And looking back over the last 12 years, it really has been amazing to see how all of the random things that I was able to do didn't really make sense to me at the time why I was doing them, how they have direct application to what we're trying to do now in educating both legislators and citizens about these ideas.
Now, is this an organization for South Carolina, or is it going to have more far-reaching effects to it across the country?
Well, this is an organization, I want to stress, by South Carolinians for South Carolina. I think a lot of times we see folks kind of coming in with these national groups that kind of parachute into a state, and they're here around maybe a single issue, or they're here for a year and then they leave again. We are here for the long haul because we are South Carolinians and we're committed to the long-term well-being of South Carolina. So I'm excited about really digging into this for the long term here.
Now, would you say that you're a Republican organization?
No, actually, we are a 501c3 organization. I guess we were lucky that our C3 application was
approved. You didn't have the word conservative
or Tea Party. So we didn't get flagged. But no, we are a 501c3 nonprofit organization. So we plan.
When did you get that status, by the way?
Pardon me?
When did you get that status?
It was in 2009.
Wow.
Yeah, maybe DeMint would have flagged it with the IRS if he had been involved with it back then.
Exactly.
So we were fortunate in that. So we are a nonpartisan organization, and we do plan to work on issues in a bipartisan way. One of the things that we feel very strongly where we can make a big difference is in the idea of education reform, or as I like to call it, education transformation. We don't need to reform our system. We need to fundamentally transform how we deliver education in South Carolina.
Well, I know that you were in one of your write-ups here, it talks about the educational system in Florida, mm-hmm. and of course, Mick Zeiss, our state superintendent of schools, was very interested in that and how that came together with reading and how we get to that point where all our people can read.
Yeah, it really is such a fundamental issue, literacy. They say that from K to 3, you learn to read, and then from third grade on, you read to learn. And so if you can't master reading in those early grades, you really are just floundering through the rest of school. And if you manage to not drop out because you're so discouraged, you get to college unprepared, either for advanced educational work or to enter the workforce. I mean, the kind of remedial education, when you talk to folks like Sunny White at Midlands Tech, the money that they spend on remedial education for the high school graduates that reach them is just stunning. And so we think that if you really address root causes, in this case, third grade reading, and we do have a great example of how innovative governors like Governor Jeb Bush in Florida went about fundamentally transforming the way that his education system worked. I think we have a great example to look at. So we're not flying blind as we try to do this.
Absolutely. Well, and what do you think about the direction that has been set in motion, shall we say, starting next year, with this third grade? What do you think about it?
Well, you know, the third grade reading is something that's still kind of a concept at this point. There have been bills introduced in both the Senate and the House that I'm hopeful that we'll see some progress made on in this next legislative session.
That's next year then, Ellen. Is that what you asked?
It is next year, yeah.
See, that's the thing we don't realize. It's done. What's done in South Carolina for this year is basically done. They come back, what, next week, I think?
Next week to discuss the budget, and then they'll probably be in the week after that to deal with any vetoes from the governor. But then the legislative session is done for the year, which is probably a good thing. They say there's a whole lot less mischief going on when legislators are not in session. Congress could probably take a lesson from South Carolina on that front. That's just my own personal commentary. The third grade reading, I think, is really important. And one thing that is I want to stress about what Florida did is that this wasn't a big new bureaucracy that they spent a lot more money on. It required more taxes, more spending. They basically said, what is the most important priority for our education spending? And they decided their most important priority was that their kids could read by the end of third grade. So they figured out how to repurpose money that they were already spending and center it around creating teacher programs to train teachers how to correctly teach literacy, how to identify learning disabilities and things, challenges that students had in learning to read, and then giving intense focus to the students who needed that extra help. Maybe they came from a more disadvantaged background, but they repurposed money that they were already already spending. And I think that's a key point, is that we have to figure out how to better spend the money that we're already spending, not spend more.
Absolutely. You are correct. Hey, I'm here with Ellen Weaver. She is president and CEO of the Palmetto Policy Forum right here in Greenwood. She's with us. I'm excited to be talking to her. Hope you're enjoying the show. Hey, if you've got a question or a comment, give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984. We'll be back after a word from our sponsors.
Gold, gold, more precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here at Sharp Facets Gallery. We've just been talking about education and reading. You know, one of the things that astounded me, I was talking to somebody, actually somebody out at Piedmont Technical College right here. We were discussing the fact that if you don't read, and how many ways can you do so you really don't have to read? You can watch the news on TV. You can see video clips. You know, you can really get by without reading, but that you lose that ability to read. And that so many, particularly in our area, Ellen, when the mills closed down, we had people that could read, but because of their job and everything, they never had to use reading. In order to move on, they had to learn to read all over again. I found that fascinating.
Yeah, that really is. I mean, reading is such a fundamental component of what it takes to be successful in today's job market. We really have moved away. Even manufacturing jobs that we have coming to South Carolina are very high tech. They require intense instruction and learning to be able to fulfill them. And I think that, you know, one employer I was talking to told me that they have to interview 11 people in order to find one person that is even minimally qualified to take the kind of job that they have. And these are not rocket science jobs.
Sure.
And so I think that, you know, literacy is just so fundamental to surviving in a free society, not only in the workforce, but as an educated citizen. When you think about all of the rights and responsibilities that we have as citizens, an educated public is foundational to that. And if you can't read, you can't process and absorb all of the information that you have to absorb to be an informed citizen.
You have to depend on somebody else to tell you what you think.
That's right.
And that, to me, is a big problem.
Yeah. Well, and I think about, you know, growing up, reading opened up such vast worlds for me. I came from a very literacy-rich home. My mother loved to read. She read to me all the time when I was growing up. And books opened up a new world of possibilities for me. Reading has been a path to success in my life. I mean, I came from a, you know, lower middle-class family. We were not well off by any stretch of the imagination. But I've had incredible opportunities because of the foundation that I was given in literature and in the basic ability to read and write.
Sure. I mean, absolutely. I mean, where would we be if we couldn't understand? I mean, where could you be and what all you're working on if you couldn't read and understand all
That's
this stuff?
Right. Yeah. So really, literacy, I think, is the key to unlock the door of opportunity for many of our most disadvantaged populations. And I think that, you know, we the very first study that we ever came out with, which you referenced earlier, was doing a comparison between educational outcomes in Florida and South Carolina over the last 10 years. Florida actually started out well behind South Carolina in, I guess, what teachers call NAEP scores, which is kind of the nationally recognized benchmark for comparing scores, education outcomes between different states. Florida was well behind South Carolina in 1998 when Governor Bush came into Florida as governor. Through his reforms, Florida turned around their education system to the point that low-income students in Florida now outscore the entire student population of South Carolina on fourth grade reading, which just goes to show that demographics aren't destiny. Low income and minority children can learn if the adults in the system are incentivized and held accountable to help them learn.
Absolutely. Well, let's certainly hope that they take this up next year and that we can get on the right path here, because like you said, the jobs are coming to South Carolina, but we can't compete if we can't put the right type of person in that type of job.
That's right. And reform is never final. That's something that Governor Bush says that I think is maybe seems obvious to some, but I think is very insightful, is that no matter how well we're doing, we have to always do better. And that's the reality of the global marketplace that we live in.
That has something to do with maybe competitive federalism?
Yeah, it absolutely does. What a great segue. It's almost like you've been doing this for a while. Or
maybe
something.
I have. And that's part of what Palmetto Policy Forum is all about. What exactly does that mean?
That's a great question. Everybody's like, what are you talking about? Well, competitive federalism is really, at its core, our foundation for being. Because we believe fundamentally that when states are allowed to compete under the federalist system that our founders established in the U.S. Constitution, when we have the flexibility as states and communities to control the dollars and decisions in our own communities and figure out how we solve the problems that face us as a community and as a state, that competition for solutions between states is actually what makes America strong. Instead of waiting for Washington to send us a one-size-fits-all solution, and I say solution in quotation marks, a one-size-fits-all solution, we are able as states to develop the answers to the problems that we face. And we feel like that is foundationally what drives us as an organization, is that we want South Carolina to be on the forefront of developing those solutions.
Well, we have, and yet in our state, you know, we have so many problems. The roads, the bridges, our infrastructure are huge problems for us. If we don't get a handle on this, if something doesn't come through in our state budget to be able to handle this, we're going to crumble. Mm-hmm. Crumble right here and not be able to compete, because we've got to be able to move the product from Greenville in this upstate area down to our port. That
right.
Port has to be taken care of. So how does this organization fit together with that?
Competitive federalism, the whole idea that we have come behind, that we've identified in coordination with 31 other groups from around the country. So we are part of a network of like-minded groups that are trying to do the same thing in their own states, which is really exciting to see. But we came up with the idea that competitive federalism should support a competitive federalism pledge, which says that our legislators who sign on to this pledge will support legislation both at the federal and state level that will return all of the taxing power over education, transportation, and Medicaid to the state. Right now, South Carolina sends about $17.3 billion in taxes to the IRS, and $7.3 billion of that is for those three categories that I just identified: education, transportation, and Medicaid. We say that money should never go to D.C. in the first place. That money should stay in South Carolina for South Carolina to be able to fund its roads and bridges that it sees fit. We shouldn't have to ask Washington for permission to repair our bridges, for our education, for our Medicaid. We should be able to keep all of that money here. Now, we realize that's an ambitious goal and that's not going to happen overnight. This is a long-term project,
sure.
But that's why we exist. We exist to educate legislators about why this is the path forward, and also to work, like I said, with our collaborators in other states who are also trying to do the same thing with their legislators and with their congressional delegations, because that's going to have to start in Congress at the federal level. And the good news is your Congressman, Jeff Duncan, was actually a keynote at a breakfast that we did in Columbia for legislators, explaining to them the idea of competitive federalism and why we believe this is so important. And Congressman Duncan was actually our first federal official to sign the pledge. So we're excited to have him as a supporter of this initiative.
Absolutely. Well, you know, the problem is we send this money up there and then we have to match the funds to get it to come back here. I mean, it really mm-hmm. is a problem to get the money back here, and it's a catch-22 almost.
It is. And really, you know, Washington always is going to apply conditions to the funds that it sends back. So it's no longer yours to spend as you want. I mean, we have no real control over our Medicaid program right now. Medicaid is the single biggest driver of spending in our state budget, in growth and spending in our state budget. And we have no real control over how that money is spent, because it's all dictated by the program as it's run out of D.C. That's not right.
No, it's not right. It's not right at all. It's not right that that they're trying to pass a law that puts us outside of Obamacare. That's going to be an interesting conversation that we're going to have after we come back from the news. But what, just real quick, Ellen, who has signed on to your Federalist Pledge here?
I don't have the full list in front of me, and I hasten to say that we are at the beginning of this effort. So if someone is not listed on our website, which is palmettopolicy.org, go to the Competitive Federalism page, and you'll see a link to click right there to see who has signed the report so far. So we've had probably about 15 legislators, Superintendent Mick Zace, as well as Congressman Jeff Duncan, have signed our pledge, and we're in the process of initiating outreach to our other officials, congressional delegation, et cetera, asking them to sign on as well.
Absolutely. Well, this sounds like we're going to have a more interesting conversation as the next half hour comes up, so I need you to stay right here on WCRS 1450 AM. We also, if you have a question about anything that we're talking about or you'd like me to delve into, give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984. It's time for South Carolina News. Don't you go away.
For the individual engrossed in McDonald's new Deluxe Angus Third Pounder, the world simply ceases to exist. You savor each bite of thick, juicy 100% Angus beef, topped with crisp red onions and crinkle-cut pickles, oblivious to the fact that the pantsuit you borrowed from your roommate has become a full-body napkin for your fanatical feasting frenzy. Angus Axiom Number 5, ignorance is bliss, or in this case, vice versa. Get lost in one of three new Angus Third Pounders, only at participating McDonald's.
Visit your local McDonald's in Greenwood and Abbeville today.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here, Sharp Facets Gallery on the 72 bypass. Gracie is snoozing away. She doesn't find this too interesting. For those of you that do find it interesting, though, we are talking with Ellen Weaver. She is president and CEO of Palmetto Policy Forum right here in South Carolina, organization that's been around for a few years, but now it's really going to kick it into high gear and become an organization that helps people understand how they can, what shall I say, control their destiny?
That's right. How they can engage on policy issues that we think are going to set the course for a more prosperous future for South Carolina. I think oftentimes, especially as a conservative, I feel like I'm kind of stuck in the role of always being angry about something because there's so much to be upset about, so much wrong with our government, especially when you look at just all the nonsense that's coming out of D.C. But our message to the grassroots is you can't be discouraged. You have to pick yourself up again. We can control our own destiny, but only if we get behind some common sense, good ideas here in South Carolina and push them forward to fruition. So we want to be for something, not just against things. And I think that's a message that will resonate with people.
It's a positive message.
It
and,
is.
You know, it seems like our whole country was built on doing that. You know, we had our World War II veterans. They came back from the war. They just got to work. They made this country into what it has been. And for some reason, people, except on the gun issue, are sitting down. Mm-hmm. They're not standing up and doing something about the things, such as, I mean, we keep hearing that the Affordable Care Act is going to be the way to go, and it's going to be such a good thing. And then we start hearing, well, no, it's going to cost more, and it's going to affect this, and are our seniors going to have the medical attention that they need? And we're looking at, as I think you call it, the Unaffordable Care Act?
Yeah, that's exactly right. We just took a little spin and gave it a little social media impact with a hashtag and said hashtag Unaffordable Care Act, because we believe that fundamentally the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, is going to collapse under its own weight and is probably going to take our healthcare system down with it if we don't have states like South Carolina willing to stand up against one of the major provisions of the act, which is the expansion of Medicaid. And I would like to just, you know, publicly commend the legislators in the State House this year for the work they did to stop the Medicaid expansion. Governor Haley has stood courageously against this and said, we will not do the Medicaid expansion in South Carolina. And people say, well, wait, don't you care about the uninsured? What about all the poor people who don't have
the money's
healthcare?
Available?
Right. That's what they say. They say it's free money from Washington. Why wouldn't we take that? Well, the problem is there's no such thing as free money. The place that
no such thing as a free lunch.
That is a basic principle of economics. But, you know, if the states were not to expand Medicaid, it would be $609 billion in savings. That means we're not deficit spending. We're not printing the money or borrowing the money from China. This is not money that's just sitting up in some magic pot in Washington getting ready to come back down to the states if only we say yes to Medicaid expansion. This is money that's going to be borrowed on the backs of future generations. And the thing is that Medicaid isn't even serving the populations that it currently exists to serve well. You look at the waste and fraud that are currently in the system, and you look at the health outcomes for people who are in Medicaid. There have been studies that show you're actually better off being uninsured than you are being in the Medicaid program. It just isn't the right thing. Medicaid needs to be reformed, not expanded. And I'm proud of our folks in South Carolina for standing strong on that issue, but it's not over yet. We'll be fighting this issue for several years to come here in Columbia.
Well, what is the right answer then, Ellen?
I think that there are a lot of different things that states can do to reform Medicaid. And actually, I always use Governor Bush, it seems like, as an example. But Governor Jeb Bush in Florida.
Is he going to be running for president next, Ellen? I mean, you know, there's words out there about that.
There are. But, you know, outside of any political ambition that he has, I think there were a lot of things that he did as governor that were very forward looking and are the kind of things that we would want our chief executives, our governors, to do. And one of those things was that he actually developed pilot programs in a couple of Florida counties, got a waiver from the Bush HHS administration at that point to innovate in their Medicaid and to make it more patient-centered as opposed to program and dollar-centered. And they saw great results for that, and they continue to see great results for that. So our goal is to work with people all over the country who are far smarter healthcare minds than mine to say, what are some of these things that we can do as a state to better serve the uninsured? You know, some of the things that our own HHS director, Tony Keck, has talked about, you know, how do we lower mortality rates? Infant mortality rates in this state are horrible. How do we lower mortality rates, especially among more uneducated women? I was telling you before the break, I think, that I saw in the New York Times, of all places, a study that directly linked smoking and joblessness as the number one indicators of increasing mortality. It wasn't lack of insurance. It wasn't lack of access to a doctor. It was joblessness and smoking. So it seems like if we could address those two issues, and how do you address the joblessness issue? This gets back to what we were talking about in the first segment, which is education. Why don't we talk about education as it relates to healthcare? See, all of these things are so interrelated, and it's not just going to be this magic solution that if we take this, quote, free money from Washington, that all our ills are going to be better. All that's going to do is fundamentally bust our state budget going forward.
Well, you know, I think you could take the money for 3 years, and then in the fourth year, you are SOL because you've got to have the money to be able to continue this. You can't back out of it at that point.
And as the populations grow, we have no idea how much spending we'd be on the hook for. And you even look at some of the other programs that have come out of Washington where the feds promise a certain percentage match, and they don't meet that now. I mean, there's program after program after program that you can point to. So they say they would cover 90% now. There's no guarantee that would actually happen.
No, there's not. And then, of course, we're looking at the IRS being the implementer and our overseer, I guess mm-hmm. we should say, for the Affordable Care Act or mm-hmm. Obamacare. And right now, I think that they're going to have a big problem because I don't think anybody wants the IRS overseeing this position, particularly with what all's happening in Washington.
Anybody in their right mind, that's exactly right. I can promise you I don't want the IRS in charge of my health care. I want my doctor and me to be in charge of my health care. And I think that is fundamentally what we have to ask is, how do we make our citizens healthier? It's not about how we insure our citizens or how we spend money on their health. It's about how we actually make them healthier. And I think to do that, you have to look at reforms that fundamentally restore the patient-doctor relationship. It has to stop being about bureaucrats making decisions about what government-funded healthcare will or won't pay for.
And then, of course, you know, if this comes down the pike, will we have actually our own doctor?
And that's the scary thing, especially when you look at this Medicaid expansion, is that there are not enough Medicaid doctors to serve the current population. So if you dump a bunch of more people into the Medicaid system, the people who currently are on Medicaid are going to have fewer and fewer options, fewer and fewer choices, and they may not even be able to see the doctors that they currently see because there simply aren't enough providers to go around.
And there's enough doctors that are opting out of Medicaid and becoming concierge doctors, private doctors, and not even taking the insurance to begin with. You can file your insurance, but they're not going to take the insurance.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it's a real problem. And I really think that kind of this government command and control model of insurance has just so fundamentally distorted our healthcare system. And so many of the problems that we see today, whether it's lack of access to a doctor or just the incredibly skyrocketing costs, which the Affordable Care Act does nothing to address, in fact, makes them worse, you know, I think it's a direct result of the distortion that you see from government getting involved in our healthcare.
Absolutely. Well, we are here with Ellen Weaver. Hey, we've been now gutting the Unaffordable Health Care Act right here on WCRS. Hey, I'm Ann Eller. We're talking about it. We're going to got a lot more things we want to talk about. I want to talk a little bit about this new case with the humanist and religion there in Greenville about the children that graduated, and that was a problem for the humanists. So I want to talk about that. I want to talk a little bit about our military and how that is creating some issues that I think should not even be an issue that we're talking about. But we're going to talk about it right here on WCRS. Don't you go away.
Gold dust at my feet on the sunny side of...
This year will be a simpler year. One fine gift to last a lifetime from Mother Earth with love. A diamond to light the way and create the energy to keep your love alive. Only at Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood, 229-6276.
Oh, that's right. We are right back here, Sharp Facets Gallery. We are talking with Ellen Weaver. She is president and CEO of the Palmetto Policy Forum. That's a mouthful right there, Ellen, to say.
It is. You can say PPF.
PPF. All right. Well, that sounds good, too. She is working here in our state. It's a relatively new organization. They are going to be helping to give us some competitive federalism, leveraging the Constitution to rebuild America. And, of course, Senator Jim DeMint, former Senator Jim DeMint, now president of the Heritage Foundation, feels very strongly about organizations like this and other organizations that are across the country.
He sure does. And he really wants the Heritage Foundation, I think, to serve as a resource for these state groups that are out there. He said so many times, you know, Washington is a mess that's just from one cliff or crisis to the next. And we're never going to be saved out of Washington. Solutions, and I think the answer to restoring the greatness of our country is going to start with people, and it's going to start with the states.
You know, the problem is, though, Ellen, the federal government controls so much that just the paperwork that I have to do, owning a radio station, owning Sharp Facets, the bureaucracy that I deal with, a lot of small businesses just can't deal with that. I mean, the Affordable Care Act is mandating how you're going to have to deal with this, and all these things. Immigration, you know, there's another great issue. Rubio is out there pushing for this new immigration policy. It's made it through the Senate. Is it going to be able to come law? Is it a good law, you know, is the next question.
Yeah, there's no question that Washington has fundamentally altered the paradigm of power over whether citizens can control their own lives, their own destiny, their own businesses, or whether some bureaucrat in Washington is going to do that. And that's the whole idea behind the Competitive Federalism Report, is that we found that 15 to 35 cents of every dollar that we send to D.C. is spent on waste, fraud, or bureaucracy. That's unacceptable.
Coming out left and right all over. It's like a dike, and they're just oozing out.
It really is, whether it's healthcare or, you know,
the IRS.
Yeah, you just can't win.
Yeah, you can't. So let's certainly hope that our country is not lost.
I don't think it is. I think that as long as we have people who have the will to fight, we have to stand up and say, enough is enough. This is our country. We're going to keep it as our country. I love, there was a quote from a Revolutionary War soldier when he was interviewed, I think probably 50 50 years after the war, so he was an elderly man at that time. And he said, we had always been free and we intended to be. And I think if there are enough people who say that, who stand up and say, we will not leave our country to future generations less free than it came to us, I think there's real hope.
I certainly hope so. I think when it comes to gun laws, you know, particularly in South Carolina, people stand up to that.
I agree.
But when it comes to standing up to some of the other things, we as a people don't seem to be as strong.
And some of it comes down to having good information. And that's what, you know, Palmetto Policy wants to do. While we certainly won't be able to take on every issue that's out there because we're a small organization. And so we have to be wise, especially in these early days, about how we spend our time and resources. We want to be able to provide good, positive, proactive information for citizens to go out and to talk to each other, to talk to their friends and families, as well as to talk to their elected officials, whether it's at the federal level or at the state level, about why we believe these policy issues are important and why we think here in South Carolina they should be given a chance.
So how, if somebody wants more information, how do they go about getting information?
Well, several ways. I hope, first of all, they'll visit us at palmettopolicy.org. And on that website, you can see all about who we are, who is on our board of directors. Like I told you earlier in the program, we are by South Carolinians for South Carolinians. So you'll see the wide range of folks that we have involved. You can sign up for email updates there, which, you know, we're not the NSA. We're not going to ask you for your fingerprints or your Social Security or anything like that.
But will you be keeping all this information? Yes, you will.
We will be sending you emails if you give us your email address. So we
exactly.
just need your name, email address, and then your zip code so that if issues come up that are of geographical importance, we are able to send emails based on where you live in the state. But please do sign up for emails. You can find out about different events that we hope to do in the future near you. We'd love to have folks participate. And then, of course, we're on social media, at Palmetto Policy on Twitter and Palmetto Policy Forum on Facebook.
Absolutely. So, and I know that as more people sign up and as more issues come up, it's going to start to explode for Palmetto Policy.
Well, thank you. I certainly hope so. We're very excited about the opportunity that we have here to really engage, I think, in a new kind of dialogue around these policy issues.
Absolutely. Well, listen, you know, we've got a few minutes here, and I did want to talk about, you know, there's a bill up in Congress there where the military, there's been issues about the military not being able to, let's see, one military guy was let go or fired because he had Chick-fil-A at his what was he doing? He was getting an award. Mm-hmm. He had Chick-fil-A there, and he was admonished for having Chick-fil-A because of their religious beliefs. We've had an issue with a Bible sitting on a desk, and yet our country, we fought so hard to have religious freedom, and now we see necessary to have a bill that allows people to have whatever. And whether you're an atheist or whether you're a Christian, it shouldn't matter. You should have the right to this.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. And, you know, this affects me not just as an American, but as a family member of someone who serves in the military, to think that over all of these generations, we have folks who have sacrificed and died for our right to religious freedom, and then to see, really, it's a much longer conversation than we can have.
Sure,
I guess,
exactly.
Maybe if you were smart to bring it up at the end of the show, because we could spend hours talking about this.
Sure.
But, you know, you look at I think, just the overall decay of truth in our society, and it manifests itself in these kind of tolerance pushes that we see, you know, in the military, that really is intolerance towards anyone who wants to express a religious belief, and that's the irony of it. So it's a huge problem. And, you know, you were mentioning the lawsuit that was pending against the school district up in Greenville. I can't remember the exact particulars of that case, but that's been the strategy all along by groups like the ACLU and some of these
agencies. The humanist group. Yes,
that's right. And then their strategy is to intimidate people through lawsuits. They say, you know, you just don't want to have to pay the court costs, or you can't afford to pay the court costs. So they try to intimidate you into silence using the legal system. And I think Americans are just tired of that.
Well, I think the very fact, I think we were talking about this morning on my morning show, about hate crimes are becoming one of the biggest lawsuit issues that are out there. And, you know, we used to be able to express. I mean, even some organizations are now not flying the American flag for fear that they are violating somebody else's rights. And yet this is America.
Yeah, well, and the irony is that the great progressive virtue is tolerance, and yet they're just completely intolerant of anyone who expresses an opinion that diverges from their own. And that's not the America that we know. And I think that that's why it's so important that we do raise our voices here at the state level. And I think South Carolina is in such a unique position to be a bastion of freedom to the rest of the world. You know, we are unashamedly religious in many ways. We do support the Second Amendment. We do support the right to free speech. And I think that we can set an example for what it should look like to the rest of the country.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. South Carolina is a small state, but that gives us a lot of advantages.
It does. It really does. We have a huge opportunity here to really work together to get something done. It's not impossible.
It is not impossible. And of course, where are you? You are in Columbia. You're working with legislation.
Yes, that's exactly right. We're based in Columbia. Like I said, from Greenville originally, so love the upstate, but in Columbia for now and enjoying being there.
Absolutely. Well, it certainly has been a pleasure to have you here today. We have talked about a lot of issues. We could talk a lot more, so you're going to have to come back and see us, Ellen Weaver.
I'd love to, Ann. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. So as we go towards the top of the hour, we've talked about competitive federalism. I think one more time, you ought to give people the definition so they can have it in their brain about what your organization stands for.
Absolutely. Competitive federalism, which you can see the whole report at palmettopolicy.org. If you go to the Policy Innovation tab, there's a whole link to competitive federalism that really explains more in depth what we're talking about. But the whole idea is that when states have the flexibility and ability to control the dollars and decisions for their own state, they can become laboratories of innovation, creating solutions that best fit their local communities and their state populations, instead of relying on Washington for a one-size-fits-all solution that usually creates way more problems than it solves.
Absolutely. And, you know, with 50 states out there, there are 50 different ways to do it, right?
Exactly right. And that's how it should be.
Didn't Paul Simon write a song, there was 50 ways to leave your lover?
50 ways to do policy. There you go. I see a parody coming up.
All right. Well, that's what we've been talking about here today, all the different ways. You know, in Oklahoma, I'll just mention this real quick. The governor out there was talking about how they had been able to do things because they had been innovative in doing things, and that changed what they were doing. South Carolina is doing it. We are going to be the tire capital of the world if things keep going.
That's exactly right. The number one producer of tires in the nation already.
Absolutely.
It's exciting. It's a great time to be in South Carolina. And so I think we have such huge opportunities if we come together and really focus on how we can work together to make a difference.
Absolutely. Well, you have been listening to Ellen Weaver and Ann Eller, and Gracie has phased out on this.
I'm afraid I put her to sleep.
She's not much into politics. But we are right here on WCRS. Certainly hope you're going to tune in tomorrow morning. We will be posting this interview on the website, WCRS1450AM.net. And, of course, this video will be posted on YouTube. So, Ellen, again, thanks so much for coming out today.
My pleasure, Ann. Thank you.
All right. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Bye-bye, everybody.